In March of 2020, I had the opportunity to be a part of a Baptism and Missions conference. If any of you have any knowledge of Baptism and Missions, they have a lot of missionaries in the country of Brazil. So growing up from 1991 all the way to 2009, I lived in Brazil, born and raised there. Got to go to a lot of these conferences. And these yearly conferences, somewhere between March and April, were an opportunity for the missionary families to get together, to be encouraged spiritually. There usually was a special speaker from either a missionary from a different country or a pastor of a local church here in the United States that would come. They would also often bring alongside that speaker a youth pastor or youth directors or another missionary from a different area of the country or another part of the world to come and speak to the youth. Well, I left Brazil in 2009, and in 2019, I was asked, 10 years later, I was asked to be the speaker for the coming year's conference for the youth. So over the next several months, I was asked somewhere in the summer of 2019, and all the way from that summer until March of 2020, I had the opportunity to put together activities, messages, challenges, devotionals, for a conference that went Monday afternoon all the way through Friday. And it was a lot of fun. But alongside all the other responsibilities that I was carrying at the time as a pastor, I had to do all of this preparation. It took time. In order for that conference with those youth to go well, I couldn't just flippantly say, I'll grab this sermon that I've preached in the past, and I'll grab this little devotional I've done, and, you know, this activity's fun, so let's just throw it together. No, it took time. It took planning. It took preparation. Like that retreat, like that conference, there is a seriousness about being in God's presence. There is a preparation for that presence. Psalm 15 opens with a serious question. It says, who can abide in God's presence? Who can abide as God's guest? Who is worthy to dwell with God? What is required of me to sit at God's table? We're going to read through Psalm 15. And as we read that, I want you to have a couple of thoughts in mind. There are two main divisions in Psalm 15. So if you look down at Psalm 15 and you look at verse 1, you have two questions, followed by verses 2 through 5 being the answers to those questions. So verse 1 is the question, verses 2 through 5 are the answers. But here's the unique thing about verses 2 through 5. If you look at verse 2, you need to note something positive or several positive things. You look at verse 3, you will notice several negative things. You look at verse 4, you'll notice several positive things. And then again in verse 5, several negative things. So the question in verse 1 says this. Look at Psalm 15. Lord, who shall abide in thy tabernacle? Who shall dwell in thy holy hill? Therefore, after that question is asked, what happens in the next verses? The answer is given. But the answer is given in a unique way. You have questions followed by alternating answers. You have in verses 2 and 4 positive affirmations, or you could say positive qualities, what they are to do or what they are to be. But then verses 3 and verse 5 are the negative denials or the negative restraints, what they are to avoid or what they are to refuse. So if you would like to, if you like reading and writing in your Bible, I like doing this, you can just write next to number 1 or verse 1, you could write question, or you can just even put question mark. And then verse 2, positive. Verse 3, negative. Verse 4, positive. Verse 5, negative. Those things you should and those things you should not do. So as we read through Psalm 15, keep this in mind because this will be the flow of our meditation tonight from Psalm 15. Starting in verse 1. Lord, who shall abide in thy tabernacle? Who shall dwell in thy holy hill? He that walketh uprightly and worketh righteousness and speaketh truth the truth in his heart. He that backbiteth not with his tongue, nor doeth evil to his neighbor, nor taketh up a reproach against his neighbor, in whose eyes a vile person is contemned, but he honoreth them that fear the Lord. He that sweareth to his own hurt and changeth not. He that putteth not out his money to usury, nor taketh reward against the innocent. He that doeth these things shall never be moved. Now, this question and answer format was fairly common in the ancient worship context. The worshiper asks how they are to approach God, and the answer reveals God's requirements. This is not a ritual, but a moral and spiritual integrity. The worshiper comes before and says, "What am I supposed to do to be right before you, my God?" So today, we could give a lot more introduction to this. We could give an explanation of what Psalm 14 is, and that is very simply the polluted man, the sinful man. And then we go to Psalm 15 and we look at the perfect man, or the ultimate Christ. Who is this Christ? Psalm 15 is not seeking to answer the question of salvation in its entirety. Psalm 15 is not seeking to answer what exactly the life lived for Christ needs to be look like from before salvation till after, till you get to heaven. Psalm 15 is very simple. It answers this question: who can dwell in God's presence? I want to go through four simple things tonight, answering the question: who may abide as a guest of God? First is this: the standard God expects in verse 1. You could say this is the question that searches the soul. The question that searches the soul. Lord, who shall abide in thy tabernacle? Who shall dwell in thy holy hill? This chapter is often associated with Psalm 24 because David is writing about the Ark of the Covenant coming from Jerusalem. Growing up in Brazil, there were a lot of gypsies. Many of you have heard of gypsies, but you probably have not seen true gypsies. Some of them may call themselves a gypsy, but if you know a gypsy, you know it well, because they dress very uniquely, especially in Brazil. My parents, along with two other missionaries, were in the city of Sorocaba, Brazil, and we were working together to start Calvary Baptist Church. Calvary Baptist Church was on a wonderfully beautiful corner lot along a very busy street near the airport. Next to our property were three or four empty lots, large empty lots, probably equaling the size of this entirety of this property at Berea Baptist Church. Gypsies would come and go. If you know anything about gypsies, they don't stay long. They wouldn't go in one place, and then after a little while, when they get uncomfortable, they move on. Or when they've taken advantage of people that they no longer can hide, they move on, right? And this is a story. The gypsies show up and they come right to the property next to the church. Strangely enough, it's as though the end of Calvary Baptist Church ended here and the property that the gypsies took was right here. And at first we were just like, they do that. They just show up. And then one day my dad's walking around the church. He did a lot of the construction at the church, and he looks and he sees this wire coming down from the side of our property off of one of our poles going down the wall. Pretty well hidden. What do you think they did? They were taking power from us. We also found that sometimes we'd show up to the church in the morning and there was water pools under where the spigot was. They were jumping over it, over the wall, and filling up their buckets or water bottles or whatever it was, and they were taking our things. Now, my dad took it as an amazing opportunity to share the gospel. If you know anything about gypsies, they are all over in the spiritual realm, but it's a very dark thing for them, very spiritually dark and lost. My dad was as patient as possible, but eventually my dad had to say this: you got to go. You have to go. You cannot stay here anymore. You are no longer welcome. I don't want to call the police. What are gypsies? They are known for being temporary. When the ark came to town, it rested in the tabernacle, in a tent, and it was intended to be temporary. We jump into verse 1 where it introduces us this question. This is a probing inquiry into the conduct of a person when coming into the presence of God. How does one come into the tabernacle or the tent where Jehovah himself has been. One author said this, "Jehovah, who shall be a guest at thy tent? God is the host, and we are only the noble invited guests." I want to share three things with you about this standard that God expects. First, it is a divine invitation. It is a divine invitation. Lord, who shall abide in thy tabernacle? A psalm begins with searching, soul-level type question. David isn't asking who can visit God occasionally, but who can abide with him? Who can remain in close fellowship with God himself? The tabernacle was God's dwelling place among his people. It symbolized intimacy with him. David longs to be near God, not just on special occasions, but continually. David wanted to be with God at all times. This is a divine invitation from God to dwell with him at all times. This is also a temporary tent and a permanent hill. The tabernacle was temporary. It's a tent, as we said, but the holy hill represents that permanence. The tabernacle moved, the holy hill did not. As believers, we're reminded that this world is temporary. We live in tents, so to speak, and that permanence is of God's presence. Heaven is our home. David longed to build God a permanent house, and that desire points to our longing to be permanently with our Lord. Is that your desire today? So we have a divine invitation, a temporary tent and a permanent hill, as well as a spiritual self-check. This isn't about following outward rules and rituals. It's about the state of the heart. This is what Psalm 15 reaches to. It reaches to your heart. When we consider coming into God's presence, the question is not, what have I done? It is, what am I becoming? Not what have I done in the past, but now what am I seeking to become? Who am I becoming like? This psalm acts like a mirror. It doesn't ask if you're religious. It asks if your character is reflective of the God you claim to worship. Psalm 15 begins with a question, but it doesn't leave us guessing. The rest of the psalm answers it with 10 characteristics that describe the kind of person who dwells with God. First, let's look at the kind of life that reflects his presence. A life that God recognizes. The life that God recognizes. This could be said, the character of God's guests. By what is a person known? They're known by what is observable. That which people see of you over time is who you really are. Now I want you to recognize, starting in verse 2, this alternating pattern. We're going to start with three positives, three affirmations, three qualities that we are to pursue. First one being this. This person who dwells in the presence of God, who abides as a guest at God's table, walks uprightly. He that walketh uprightly, in verse 2. To walk uprightly is to have a life of integrity. It means your private life and public life match. You're the same person when people are watching and when no one is watching. Integrity isn't perfection, but it is consistency. It's the pursuit of holiness. It's repentance when you stumble, and it's striving for that obedience. There is a predictable pattern to be found in your life. This is a person who walks uprightly. Your path is known by other people, and that path is the pursuit of that which is right. Could your closest friends say that about you? Your path is clear and your target is aiming for the glory of God? You know, but beyond a public walk, though, is a plainness about a person's pursuit. This person works righteousness. This person works righteousness and worketh righteousness, in verse 2. This righteousness is not just a talk. They do right. They don't just talk about being right, but they actually do what is right. You know, we all have lived long enough to agree that doing right isn't always convenient. It may mean saying no to a certain family expectation because God comes first. It may mean turning down a job for the sake of ministry for God. It may mean choosing truth even if it costs you. God is not pleased with anything less than a righteous life. This person works righteousness. This person pursues righteousness with their life. But righteousness begins within. This person speaks truth in their heart. This person speaks the truth. The truth spoken here isn't just outward honesty. It's inward sincerity. You don't just speak the truth to others. You speak the truth in your heart. You're honest with yourself before God. There's no pretense, no deceit, and no inner duplicity. Spurgeon said it this way, "Saints will not lie even in the closest of their hearts, for God is there." God is there. You know, the positive qualities of a person walking with God are that blameless life, a commitment to justice, and authentic sincerity. But now I want us to flip over to three negatives. Three things that we should deny. Three things that we should restrain ourselves from participating in. And first is this. This person guards their tongue. He that backbiteth not with his tongue. This person does not slander with their mouth. They abide in God's presence and they don't slander or gossip. You know, gossip often disguises itself as concern or even jest. But gossip damages. It discredits others, and Scripture warns that those who backbite are not fit to enter God's presence. Some receive joy in speaking badly about other people. You know, Spurgeon, again, said this, "Saints not only desire to love and speak truth with their lips, but they speak truth within. They will not lie even in the closest of their hearts, for God is there to listen." We must guard our tongue. We must guard how we think. But then we had that first negative, guards their tongue. But then we could summarize the second and third one as does no harm to others. Look at verse 3. "Nor doeth evil to his neighbor, nor taketh up a reproach against his neighbor." The true worshiper treats others with respect and with grace. You look at the example of David. He had the chance to harm Saul, but he chose to restrain. To be blameless means that we don't use other people to climb higher. We don't mistreat our neighbors for gain or for convenience. This is a relational integrity. This is a relationship with one another where you have integrity toward other people. This is not a shame or disgrace towards someone else. It's not a negative report about someone and spreading it. It's not entertaining criticism or even carrying a grudge. This person does no harm to other people. Now, these six character traits we've looked at, both the three positive and then the three negative, reflect a life that values integrity in a daily behavior. But the psalmist goes further. Next, he shows us the convictions that rule the heart of the one who dwells with God. Third, the heart God rewards. The heart that God rewards. You could say it this way, the convictions that define the heart. The convictions that define the heart. Now we're going to see four convictions. Both positive and negative that define a person. First, this person rejects evil and respects the godly. In whose eyes, verse 4, a vile person is contemned, but he honoreth them that fear the Lord. This isn't self-righteousness or despising others. It's about having a moral backbone. You don't tolerate evil. You don't applaud wickedness. You love sinners, but you don't excuse their sin. You uplift those who walk with God. You honor faithfulness, and you surround yourself with godly influences. This psalm, Psalm 15, has a lot packed into it, but there is something we are headed toward, and I hope you are gathering that God has a direction for the life of the believer, how we are supposed to live, and these are some touch points for us. This person rejects evil and respects the godly, but this person also keeps promises at personal cost. He that sweareth to his own hurt and changeth not. This is powerful. The man who dwells with God keeps his word even if it costs him. As believers, our words should mean something. If we say we will do something, we follow through with it. Or even simply so, someone comes to your house and they quote a job. They show up to do the job. They finish the job. And they look at you and they say, I am sorry. I told you this much, but it's going to have to be that much. And they don't keep their word. We as believers keep our word. What we say is who we are. This person keeps promises even if it costs them. But then finally, this person maintains moral finances. This again is two in one. Look at verse 5. He putteth not out his money to usury, nor taketh reward against the innocent. This person does not take advantage of others financially. Under the Jewish law, they weren't even to charge interest to the poor or take bribes. But in our context here, it means this. Money does not rule us. Money does not control us. We don't manipulate for gain, and we don't bend principles for profit. We don't bend what we say is true to bend that in order to gain more for ourselves. All of these qualities point to a heart that is shaped by the holiness of God. They reveal someone who has convictions that match their actions. Did you hear that? It reveals someone whose convictions match their actions. But what's the result of living this way? We all know, if we read Psalm 15, verses 2 all the way through the first half of verse 5, we'd say, yes, I should live this way. You should live this way. Let's all encourage each other to live this way. You could sit down in a Bible study. You could sit down with your spouse. You could sit down with a friend and read Psalm 15, and you could say, we should live this way, but why? Why should we live this way? This Psalm 15 ends with an incredible promise. And this is why. The promise that God reaffirms. This is the reward of the righteous. He that doeth these things shall never be moved. This is a life that stands firm. This phrase is more than just poetic. It means stability. It means strength. It means endurance. A life that may shake you around, but a person rooted in righteousness stands firm. This is a life that stands firm, but it's also a picture of Christ. Who truly meets all of Psalm 15's standards? Jesus. He alone walked in full integrity, worked complete righteousness, and kept every promise he made. He became the guest who invites us to the table. Through his righteousness, we are welcomed. But then finally, this is a pathway for believers. It's a pathway for believers. So we see the example of Christ, that picture of Christ, but then we have the pathway that we can follow. Because of Christ, we can now follow this pathway. Not in perfection, but in pursuit. 1 Corinthians 11:28 challenges us to examine ourselves. Before we come to the table in just a couple of moments, I encourage you to examine your own life compared to Psalm 15. This week, may this psalm be a weekly mirror for you. Ask this question to yourself. Is my life fit for God's presence today? Is the life that I'm pursuing, are those 10 characteristics of the believer, am I pursuing those things? You know, what are the characteristics of a person that can come into the presence of God? Let's put it all on the screen here. This person is sincere, is righteous, is honest, is without slander, is without doing wrong, is without reproaching, distinguishes between good and evil, is a person that keeps their oath, and does not take interest nor accept bribes. Obedience to God's revealed will is the requirement for full enjoyment in His presence. Obedience to God's revealed will is the requirement for fully enjoying His presence. Look down at Psalm 15, the end of verse 5. We already read it, but I'm going to read it again. I want to ask you a question. Psalm 15, verse 5, last part. He that doeth these things shall never be what, church?
Moved.
So let me ask you this question. You don't want to be moved? You want to have some stability in your life? Let's look at just a couple of Psalms that encourage us what that life, that not being moved, looks like. Psalm 16, verse 8. I have set the Lord always before me because He is at my right hand. I shall not be moved. Psalm 21, verse 7. For the king trusteth in the Lord, and through the mercy of the Most High, he shall not be moved. Psalm 30, verse 6. And in my prosperity, I said, I shall never be moved. Psalm 62, verse 2. He is only my rock and my salvation. He is my defense. I shall not be greatly moved. And finally, Psalm 112, verse 6. Surely he shall not be moved forever. The righteous shall be an everlasting remembrance. Obedience to God's revealed will is a requirement for fully enjoying His presence. These 10 characteristics are something that we could dwell on every single day this week. We could remind ourselves of these things. Maybe for some of you, you looked at that list with the check marks and you said, I can identify something there. I can identify something there. And as we step into this next part of our service, this is an opportunity for you to examine yourself, to look at your life, to say, God, what things may there be in my life that you need full control over? What things in my life have I been saying, this is mine, I'll hold on to this, and by doing so, you are saying, God, I don't need you right now. I don't need your presence. I don't need to dwell with you. I don't need to abide with you. I want my way. Tonight, as we step into the Lord's table, I want to encourage each one of us to meditate on this.